Troy Carter is a unique figure in the global music business because he's seen things from all sides. For years, Los Angeles-based Carter was a successful manager of artists. Those artists included Eve and Lady Gaga, with Carter playing a pivotal behind-the-scenes role in Stephanie Germanotta's rise to superstardom. Carter was also a successful early investor in the likes of Uber, Dropbox and Lyft, as well as Spotify, where he became global head of creator services in 2016, before leaving the role 2 years later. In 2019, Carter launched Q&A, a distribution services and tech company working with independent artists and labels whose roster today includes the likes of Baby Rose and Pink Sweats. Shortly after launching, Q&A announced a merger with Human Resources, the Jay Irving-led distribution and artist development company. Earlier this month, Sony Music bought Human Resources off Q&A. Here, Troy Carter discusses the Human Resources sale and the future, both for Q&A and the music business at large. Troy Carter, welcome to the Music Business Worldwide podcast.
What's up, Tim?
You were in the news days ago announcing that Sony Music had acquired Human Resources from Q&A, with Jay Irving going in-house at Sony as a result of that deal. Obviously, there's been a disposal of Human Resources from Q&A to Sony Music. So why did you make that decision? And why was now the right time to do it?
You know what? You know, it's a really interesting time in the music business, just as Sony, you know, they were looking at, you know, how do they round out the services for their distribution arm, the Orchard. And, you know, Jay and I had always had a great relationship with Rob Stringer, and Rob's a legend, and, you know, we love Rob. So, you know, when we were approached about it, you know, it just really made sense, you know, just all the way around. So I think it was a good fit for Sony, good deal for us. And, you know, Jay's my best friend. So it's like, you know, we still are going to continue to work together for another 20 years, you know, but it just felt like a really good thing for the company.
And then the obvious question to ask is to switch it round and inquire, what does this mean for Q&A, both the short term and the longer term future of the company?
You know, our roadmap stays the same. You know, we for the last year and a half, you know, since we announced a company, you know, we've really been under the radar, just really building software and just coming up with the strategy. So for the last 6 months or so, you know, we've been in beta on, you know, a couple of pieces of the software, but, you know, we're coming out shortly and pretty imminently, and have already started onboarding a few companies already.
What would you say differentiates Q&A in a very crowded marketplace of distribution companies and or service companies working with independent artists and labels?
Yeah, we, you know, distribution was never really a focus for us. You know, I think, you know, when you're looking at the entire ecosystem, it's just an important component. You know, so, so one of the things that, you know, actually I can kind of talk a little bit more openly about it now. But, you know, we're announcing the company is called Venice Innovation Labs. And, you know, so Venice is something that we've been working on, you know, for the last 18 months. And the whole idea is, can we build software to make labels run more efficiently? And, you know, and you can offer services alongside of that. But the software, you know, is really the important piece. So, you know, we launched in beta, you know, one piece of the software is really built around research. It's called StreamRate. So, you know, it's a combination of machine learning and listener sentiment. So when labels spend a ton of money in terms of being able to put out records and really don't understand the strength of the song until it's out in the world. So, you know, can we use machine learning with listener sentiment to be able to better understand the strength of a record before you release it? And then on our other product, in terms of the distribution, we look at distribution as just a feature in the product. And we're looking at how do we offer an entire workflow system for labels where distribution is a component within that workflow system.
You've had a remarkable career so far with financial downsides and thankfully more recently financial upsides again. And I recommend people read about your life story because periods of it are jaw-dropping. But the most recent chapter of your career has been defined by success through artist management, your investments, and then your time at Spotify. What's keeping you hungry in business today, and more particularly, what's keeping you hungry in the music business today?
You know, I think we're in literally in the beginnings of what the music industry is going to look like in the future. So I think we're just getting started as an industry in terms of, you know, what it's going to look like. So for me, when I was in Spotify, I realized on the label side, it was imbalanced in terms of the amount of knowledge in terms of what the future of the business would look like that was inside of Spotify versus the rest of the industry. And, you know, where Daniel always lived about and still does lives 10 years ahead of everybody else. So, you know, one of the things I thought about a lot is what if the music industry had this same sort of capability, and instead of having software companies and outsiders build products for the industry, what if insiders were able to do the same thing? So, when you look at, you know, whether it's not the analytics that we see today, but a high level of machine learning analytics to tell you about fan engagement, sentiment, whether it can make you more efficient in your spends, you know, all of these things that, you know, most big businesses have, the music industry lacks that right now. So I feel like, you know, that's something that I got excited about, and that, we put a team together that's been building it.
It's interesting to hear you talk about machine learning and AI in this context, in terms of early fan feedback, informing where a label might put their marketing resources. But artificial intelligence is informing other parts of the industry too, particularly A&R. Can you see a future where AI has more influence on the way artists are signed? I mean, it's happening already with Tencent investing in Instrumental and Warner increasingly relying on its AI scouting tool, Sodatone, to find and sign artists. Like paint a picture of the future you see in that regard.
Yeah, I think the problem that the music industry has right now is that everybody's fishing from the same pond. So if everybody has the same exact data and the same exact inputs, they're all looking at the same thing. So only thing that does is actually it makes it worse, because it drives up the expenses on deals, and it changes the structure of deals and keeps the record companies imbalanced in a sense. So, being able to create unique sets of data and unique inputs and to make people smarter and smarter, that's what gets you ahead in the competitive landscape. So, so I think A&R really doesn't use a lot of sophisticated machine learning as much as it looks for velocity. You know, did somebody put out an independent record that's starting to get hot, you know, and should I go after it? But, you know, there's a lot of different factors that should go into that decision making, and also is things that, you know, that should be able to get you there a little bit earlier than the rest of the competition.
With around 40,000 new tracks a day being uploaded to Spotify, according to Daniel Ek, one of the criticisms of the streaming age, if you like, is that it's harder to make an artist proposition endure in the minds of the audience. So you can have a track catch fire and be huge globally, and indeed you can have, and you see artists release a number of huge tracks in the streaming age. But, you know, whether it's fueled by TikTok or fueled by Triller, there are concerns that it's the track rather than the artist people are remembering and engaging with. That makes breaking, you know, inevitably makes breaking so-called career artists much harder. What are your thoughts on that challenge for the industry?
I, you know, unpacking that, you know, I think there's, you know, is a few things in there. You know, one, I think it works to labels' disadvantage to have, you know, 50,000 songs a day come out. And when you look at the fragmentation of stars, you know, it really works to the streaming services' benefits not to have a high concentration of stars at the top, right? Because it's like, you know, it's from a leverage, just a pure leverage standpoint, streaming companies lose leverage when record companies have this very high concentration of superstars. So the fragmentation really, really works to the streaming services' advantage. I think in terms of labels, you still have the ability to build those next big superstars. I think it's a matter of having patience. I think it's really focusing on the body of work and the creativity and the art. And, you know, I think album formats and listening habits may have changed, but if people make great music, people are going to listen. You know, it's the same difference of people still watch 2-hour movies. You know, if the narrative of the movie is great and the acting is great, the same way people would listen to, you know, a full length album if, you know, if the content is great. So I think we can't lose sight of great artists in the name of trying to keep up with technology. I think there's a medium in between the two.
We were talking just before we started recording about mutual acquaintance, Jody Gerson, who runs Universal Music Publishing Group and was recently, you know, one of the people that spearheaded the Bob Dylan deal, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Jody said to me in an interview a while back, and I'll probably get the quote a little bit wrong, but that the industry has bought into the idea that it has to keep feeding the distribution platforms, the streaming platforms, and this sort of avalanche of weekly releases. And the point she was making, and I think I remember this bit right, is there's only so much music that can be brilliant. Is there an argument, do you think, that labels, including major record labels, should perhaps be signing fewer artists and focusing their resources on fewer artists?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's looking at the volume game right now. You know, so it's like this, it's this flywheel that constantly feeds. So the more music that comes out, the more you get listeners coming back to the platform. The more listeners that come back to the platforms, the more advertising that you sell. So it's this flywheel that just constantly creates. And I think artists have gotten into the habit of releasing in volume, because if you don't feel like you're putting out enough music, you know, are other artists and your contemporaries getting ahead of you and starting to pass you? So artists feel this constant need to put out music, which benefits the record labels because of the revenue, and at the same time benefits the streaming services. So I think it's just this flywheel that's going to continue to feed itself. But, you know, at the same time, you know, when you look at certain artists, you know, whether it's an Adele or whether it's a, you know, or a Lady Gaga or whether it's a Drake, you know, these are people who can take their time in terms of making projects. And when they put out music, the projects work, you know, so it's not a thing where they feel like, you know, this anxiety of, I gotta put out music or I don't exist.
I'm interested to get your perspective on the independent artist world. I'll ask you a very carefully chosen question on Chance the Rapper falling out with his manager shortly, because I appreciate that's a live legal situation. But more generally, what's your take on the sort of explosion of the independent artist market? It keeps growing its market share globally each year, and how is it going to affect the music industry and particularly the record industry as the years roll on?
Well, the independent artist sector is, you know, you are probably one of the smartest people, you know, who track music and trends from a business perspective. And, you know, the growth is obvious. And, you know, and going, you know, back to distribution, it's like, that's where it's not like it's a winner take all market. And I think there's going to be choices. So as crowded as that space may be, it's still not big. It's still not enough distributors out there especially from a quality perspective, that can take on the amount of volume and lead independent creators or independent labels on a path of success. And the trend is going to continue to grow because we see the money starting to pour in and to invest into music. So we didn't really have big pools of private equity capital or crowdsourced capital or institutional capital coming into the music industry in the past, and especially at the rate we see now. And because music is such a predictable asset for investors, we're going to see a lot of competition in the space for traditional record labels, and especially when you can marry that with a high quality service. Because right now, what record labels do have on independent distributors is this core level of institutional expertise on how to build superstars around the world. And when you can marry that capital with that expertise on the independent side, you know, I think we're going to see a big shift. It's going to be a really big shift.
Sorry, if I've understood correctly, you're talking about the sort of second or third coming of independent labels.
Yes, I feel like we're already seeing that happen, and but I think we're going to see even a bigger wave. So I think we'll see it'll be levels in it, right? So you'll have the new wave of independent labels, but also you'll have a new wave of independent artists where being independent isn't a means to an end. It's not, I'm going to be independent so I can get a record deal. It's, I'm going to be independent and I'm going to stay independent because I have freedom, I have revenue, I have partners in place that can help me long-term around the world, and especially and without having to give up, you know, all of my upside, essentially. So I think that it'll be more sustainable, because right now it's been, I think a lot of artists have used independence as a means to an end.
Yes. And digging deeper into it, you know, what does this trend of independent artist market growth mean for the major record companies, and how can they counteract the tidal wave of independent artist releases coming out and biting into their market share?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, the human resources deal made sense for Sony and the Orchard, because that helps answer that's a good answer to their problem. And especially, you know, as we look at the urban market where human resources has done incredibly well, it's this helps solve that problem. And I think we'll see more of that and I think we'll see a lot of roll-ups and acquisitions in that space. But I do think that it's going to be a long-term problem for labels, for sure.
I want to get your perspective on your old stomping ground, Spotify. Since you left, in some respects, the company has done incredibly well. You only need to look at the share price, you know, which has been greatly influenced by the podcast strategy at the company, to see that. But in other regards, and I'm particularly talking about an increasing focus on the two-sided marketplace part of their business, which really sees Spotify claw back margin from record companies in the form of marketing contributions. You know, there seems to be a creeping realization at Spotify that a path to profitability needs to be demonstrated to investors. That's obviously my take on things. I wanted to get your 10,000 foot view on what's going well at Spotify and what maybe needs to be tweaked in the years ahead in terms of the company's strategy.
Yeah, you know, the company's been doing incredibly well. And I think when a lot of people when Daniel hired Don Ostroff as head of content, I think people really questioned why, you know, that made sense. And, you know, and fast forward, you know, I think Don has done an incredible job in terms of building out a very clear content strategy that really wasn't as clear, you know, during the earlier years. And I think between what they've done in podcasts, you know, from an acquisition perspective and also a product perspective in terms of surfacing podcasts and the product and making search easier and making recommendations easier and making the flow easier, I think is a much better consumer experience. With that being said, music is still very important for Spotify, you know, and I think, you know, is a reason why, you know, they haven't abandoned music and only gone to podcasts, because I think from a consumer perspective, it's still important. And at the same time, you know, it's that balance of you still have to run it doesn't even have to be profitable as much as it makes sense from a business model perspective. So Spotify has to figure out how monetization on music in a way where, you know, that doesn't kill the business, that helps grow margin. But the balance of it, Tim, where I think people kind of look at the headline and don't look, you know, under the hood, is that if you can offer value in terms of being able to allow artists to access a bigger fan, a bigger audience than what they already have, or you're helping to build engagement with audiences and you're helping to sell tickets and you're helping to do all of these things to build revenue, I think there should be an exchange and dollars for that, you know. So and also when you look at the contribution that streaming has made to the music industry, it's significant. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So when labels no longer have to spend money on marketing albums, but yet you still get to collect that revenue, that's significant. So I think you know, I'm probably one of the only people who has like deeply lived on both sides of these and multiple sides, actually, you know, both as a manager, you know, somebody who's worked with labels and somebody who's worked within streaming. And I think is a symbiotic relationship there that, you know, you could be frenemies, but I think they need each other.
Yes, and it's always going to be a very difficult thing for any music streaming service to differentiate itself from the others in the market just off the music streaming catalog, because everyone's effectively got everything. So it looks like, you know, this idea that Spotify needs to follow Netflix's strategy and have an exclusive aspect to its offering appears to me that they're trying to achieve that through spending big on podcasts and podcast exclusives, if I've understood the strategy correctly.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very clear in terms of the importance of podcasts to Spotify, and I think we're in the early days in podcasting as well, by the way, and so I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I think there's a ton of opportunity.
I mentioned before that this is a live legal situation, so I'll couch this carefully. But the fallout between Chance the Rapper and his manager, Pat, is, from a certain perspective, one of the saddest things to happen in the music business for some time, just because their story up until 2019 or so was so inspirational for independent artists everywhere. One question I can ask you about it is, when it seems that the demands and the vastness of that career overwhelmed the bonds that tied artist and manager and the whole operation together, what lessons can the industry, independent artists and artist managers take from that kind of storyline?
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. Like, to me, when I saw it, I was definitely sad, because I think what Chance and Pat built was so inspirational. And and the time I've spent with Pat, you know, I think he's one of the smartest managers who I've ever worked with. And, you know, and I think the work speaks for itself. I don't really think it has that much to do with Chance being an independent artist as much as it does with him being an artist. And I think every artist, if you get, you know, over any sort of long span of time, I think the Beatles might be the only act in history that didn't catch a brick at some point. And that's because they broke up in 7 years. So it's just par for the course in terms of ups and downs and these creative cycles. You have to manage through them. So I think when you're building, and this is without me knowing any information in terms of what happened between these guys personally, but I think, you know, when you're in the foxhole together, it's like, you know, you have your wins together, you have your losses together, and you just put your heads together and you figure out how to win again. So, I just think it's par for the course.
I should point out to listeners that Troy hasn't been pre-briefed on any of these questions, so you're getting his views unvarnished and straight from the mind of the occupier, as it were. But I wanted to talk to you, Troy, about Kanye and get your perspective on him tweeting out his historical record contracts earlier this year while claiming that he was unable to buy back his masters from Vivendi and Universal. And at the same time, we have Taylor Swift alleging that she's been frozen out of control of her own masters. She's watched them be sold twice over, which is a different narrative to Kanye West, but bears some of the same hallmarks of that and the discussion around it. So with those two situations in the background, what are we learning here about the balance of power between artists and record companies?
Yeah, I think the music industry has to change the business model. It's as simple as that. There's a lot of young, new artists who are becoming smarter and smarter, and we can't be greedy. So it's like, you know, the thing is, in all fairness, record labels take a risk that most people aren't willing to take. They invest millions of dollars into an artist's career without having a clear understanding of whether they're ever going to be able to see that money back. In success, if that artist has success, then the model should change. So you might start off in a traditional record deal where the label gets 87% or 83%, and the artist gets, you know, the 17% royalty, right? Which is the average deal for a brand new artist who's never released music before, right? If that artist becomes Roddy Ricch, or, you know, whoever else, then, and you made a significant profit, then maybe the economics flip and that artist receives 75% and the label gets 25%, because now you're de-risked and you've made a profit and you have a consistent amount of revenue that flows in from these projects. So I think, but somebody is actually, we're going to see those type of models, those risk reward models, a lot. And record labels can't have infrastructure that's so locked and a cost structure that's so locked that when this model comes, that it becomes so disruptive that they can't switch their current model, and it doesn't allow them to compete with entrepreneurs who are looking at it from through a different lens and a more artist-friendly lens.
Presumably, you're indicating that you think record companies should prepare themselves for a less cost-heavy future.
Yes, I don't think in the future record labels are gonna own masters. That's my prediction. I don't think that's gonna be a trend that we're gonna see, you know, as we look out into the future. I think there should be deals in place where artists should own their masters, or they should be able to earn the right, you know, through success, that those masters come back to them. Now, if they're unrecouped and the record label lost money on them, then they should be able to continue to have ownership and benefit off the revenue to be able to pay them back. You know, I think that's only fair.
One other big talking point of the music industry this year particularly has been the new money washing in, you know, billions of dollars coming from Wall Street and elsewhere and being spent by companies like Hypnosis Songs Fund and Round Hill and Primary Wave and Concord, as well as many others. What impact do you think this is all going to have long term on the music industry and in particular on the record and publishing industries?
You know, I think it's already having an impact. You know, I think Merck revolutionized the philosophical ideas around what it means, what catalog ownership means. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you think philosophically, years ago, if you were a songwriter, your catalog basically was passed on to your estate. You basically, it just was taboo for songwriters to depart with their catalogs. And I think Merck, you know, between the capital that he was able to raise from the amount of capital, but also Merck is a manager at heart, a talent manager. And so, and I think he understands what's important to artists. And so I think him being able to sit in a room, have those conversations with artists about being a steward of their catalogs, and at the same time being able to bring some serious cash to the table and give people some significant liquidity, that's a game changer, and you know, which becomes hard to compete with when you got the capital and trust coupled together. So people who are coming in with just capital, they won't be able to get a lot of the deals that Merck's been able to get because he is a trust factor there. So I think it's the combination of the two that really works. The other thing that I think as well is just with predictive analytics right now and us being able to see in real time that what artists are going to be able to make off of streams, real time payments. You know, I think we see the sort of rudimentary version of it right now, but I think you'll be able to get paid in real time, which is going to be very, very, very hard to compete with, because a lot of times artists will take deals and advances to solve current cash flow issues. So I think once you're able to cash flow, that really changes models. And when you can do it at scale, it becomes dangerous.
And presumably you don't think we're that far away from that kind of real-time cash flow situation.
We're in it now. It's just not at scale, and it's not the norm. This will become the norm. It'll be the norm. You get paid every day.
I'm very aware that I'm privileged enough to get to have conversations with yourself and others who offer sort of enlightening perspectives on the industry. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that many other interested parties out there won't get that kind of access. And so it kind of falls on me a little to ask, if I were an independent artist, let's say I had a track that started to catch fire on streaming services, what would be the one golden piece of advice that you would pass on to me in terms of my career and the decisions that I'm about to make?
Be willing to bet on yourself. And, you know, going back to you know, Pat and Chance the Rapper, you know, what they were able to do is really take a bet on themselves. And they had a confidence level within their core team that they, what they didn't know, they would learn. Relationships they didn't have, they would aggressively pursue those relationships. And they didn't have to take every single dollar off the table. And that's a discipline that comes along with it. So if you could bet on yourself and have the patience and discipline, you'll get there and you'll be able to have more leverage and make clearer, more long-term decisions. And you won't make a lot of the conversations that I have, you know, pretty much a few times a month is with artists or with managers who I might have talked to in the past about, you know, just the same conversation about being patient and betting on yourself, who had gone and did deals that now regret the types of deals that they made because it doesn't allow them to accomplish their long-term goals. So, you know, don't take all of the money off the table right now. Maybe it's figuring out, you know, a smaller deal that gives you more flexibility.
Troy Carter, thank you for joining us on the MBW podcast.
No, thank you, Tim.